States government. This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McMeekin. The acting U.S. Homeland Security Chief, Kevin McAleland, is defending last week's immigration raids on food processing plants in Mississippi. 680 people were detained in raids on Wednesday, but he told NBC's Meet the Press that the timing was unfortunate, coming just days after a gunman targeted and killed 22 Hispanics in a mass shooting in El Paso, Texas. McAleenan said that 32 of the migrants arrested were released within an hour of their detention and 270 within a day, oftentimes because of child care concerns. Television footage showed children weeping when they realized parents had been detained in the raids. McAleenan said that of the 680 migrants detained in the raids on operations at five companies, 200 had criminal records and will be subject to deportation to their native countries. As Hong Kong's anti-Beijing protest movement entered into its ninth week Sunday, police fired tear gas inside a train station and in several other Hong Kong neighborhoods where protesters occupied roads in another weekend of anti-government demonstrations. Protesters hurled bricks at officers and ignored warnings to leave before tear gas was deployed. Billionaire and accused child sex trafficker Jeffrey Epstein's apparent suicide while in federal custody leaves more questions than answers.
Billionaire Jeffrey Epstein's death while in federal custody in New York stuns his accusers, but they vow to press on. Attorney Spencer Coovin represents one of the women. He tells Sky News.
She was shocked, obviously, that something like this could occur under the Federal Bureau of Prisons watch.
Coovin adding,
we find it very hard to believe that he would be allowed to commit suicide, especially when he was on suicide watch from just a few days ago.
That's AP's Tim McGuire reporting. This is VOA News. Two French charities pulled 81 Sudanese men from the waters of Libya Sunday, bringing the number of migrants they have rescued at sea since Friday to 211. A spokesman for SOS Mediterranean told reporters that he expects more migrants to set out for Europe from Libya over the next few days because of good weather and the holiday, which means fewer police patrolling the beaches. Spanish aid group Open Arms said it has picked up 160 migrants recently and appealed to European governments for permission to bring them to port. Thousands of migrants from Africa try to reach EU shores from Libya every year. Those who are not rescued by charities are either left on unsafe boats or picked up by the Libyan Coast Guard and returned to Libya, where they are housed in detention facilities. The closest European nation, Italy, has complained that it is expected to shoulder more than its share of the burden in accommodating these refugees. As events marking the 70th anniversary of the 1949 Geneva Conventions get underway, the International Committee of the Red Cross says these four landmark treaties delineating the law of war are as relevant today as they were when they came into force August 12, 1949. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from ICRC headquarters in Geneva.
The 1949 Geneva Conventions grew out of the horrors of World War II. It took only 4 months for the four treaties, which are universally ratified, to come into force. The treaties contain the core elements of the international humanitarian law, the law of war, which aims to reduce suffering in armed conflict. ICRC Director of International Law and Policy, Helen Durham, recognizes the law of war is not always followed, but she notes when they work, they have an impact. Durham says an area of major concern for the ICRC is the treatment of detainees. She says clear rules governing the care of prisoners of war are laid out in the conventions. However, these frequently are not enforced in the context of civil wars where non-state actors are involved. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Brazil's far-right president, Jair Bolsonaro, said Sunday his country does not need Germany's money after Berlin said it planned to cut $40 million in aid to preserve the dwindling Amazon rainforest. Brazil's National Institute for Space Research reported last week that more than 2,200 square kilometers of Amazon rainforest were cleared in July for mining, farming, and cattle grazing. That's more than 275% higher than July of 2018. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa, welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, August 12, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zimbabwe's main opposition denies foreign agents' influence to overthrow President Mnangagwa's government.
We are definitely not planning to overthrow anyone in Zimbabwe. What we are planning to do is to organize a peaceful march to demand for reforms in the country.
Lawyers for the Malawi Congress Party want to question President Peter Mutharika before the High Court. Guinea-Bissau's opposition prepares for presidential elections. Heavy rains and flash floods affect thousands in Sudan. And the death toll in Saturday's fuel tanker explosion in Tanzania rises.
The estimates that have been issued by the police is that 68 people are feared dead, and we have a score of more than 100 who are also hospitalized getting treatment from different hospitals in Dar es Salaam and Morogoro.
And the Central African Republic musician lends his voice to the struggles faced by his country. Those stories plus Samson Omale's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A spokesman for Zimbabwe's main opposition movement for democratic change, MDC, says the group is not planning to overthrow the government of President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Instead, Daniel Molokele says the MDC is planning a peaceful march this Friday to demand reforms for a free and fair election and also against Zimbabwe's economic problems. This comes after Zimbabwe Home Affairs Minister Ken Matema reportedly claimed that foreigners were in Zimbabwe to help the opposition overthrow the government through protests. According to the report, the foreigners include a Serbian political activist credited for masterminding the Arab Spring and the Sudan protests. Molokele said the minister's assertion is cheap propaganda and a sign of panic.
We are definitely not planning to overthrow anyone in Zimbabwe. What we are planning to do is to organize a peaceful march to demand for reforms in the country to allow for a free and fair election, for a new government which is popularly elected, to end the crisis of disputed elections and illegitimacy. So that's what we are pushing for a new Zimbabwe, through constitutional means.
So where do you think the Home Affairs Minister came at Thema? Where did he get this information?
It's obviously cheap propaganda from the regime. They've been trying to message and characterize our demonstration as violent, as militant. We have been clear that we are going to have a peaceful march. So they're just in a panic mode and desperate to discredit us.
You are planning a protest on this coming Friday. What is the purpose for the protest?
It's part of our five steps in terms of the roadmap towards the legitimacy in Zimbabwe, where we say in the first step we must increase political and diplomatic spotlight on Zimbabwe. The second step is about all-stakeholder, all-inclusive political dialogue. And third step is about comprehensive reforms. It's about setting up a transitional mechanism. And then the fourth step is about comprehensive reforms. And then fifth step is about a free and fair election. And that's how we propose we can set Zimbabwe back on the roadmap to legitimacy.
Did you get police permission to have the protest?
The police do not need to give us permission. As recent as April, a High Court judgment clearly articulated that under Section 59 of the Zimbabwean Constitution, every Zimbabwean is free to demonstrate. Under the Public Order and Security Act, it's important to notify the police as a law enforcement agent. But the High Court ruling in April clearly said the police do not have any power to bar or stop a peaceful demonstration. Where they only get involved is where there is a violent demonstration to maintain law and order.
According to the Interior Minister, these so-called foreigners who are supposed to come into the country to help you, they include one of those known for masterminding the Arab Spring and the recent Sudan protests.
It's a blatant lie. It's cheap propaganda. We encourage the police in Zimbabwe to arrest any of such people. They are not working with the MDC. They should feel free to arrest them. All we are looking for is a peaceful demonstration in line with the constitution of the country.
Did you distribute any flyers or pamphlets in some cities where it says here that opposition political activists have been employed to bring offensive and dangerous weapons for use against law enforcement? This is the Interior Minister talking.
He's lying blatantly and unashamedly so. We have not distributed anything as the MDC. I'm the one in charge of communications department. I have not designed or printed even one flyer of that sort. So it's a blatant lie, but the regime is in a panic mode and they have resorted to lying.
Daniel Molokele is the spokesman for Zimbabwe's opposition movement for democratic change. He was speaking with us from the capital, Harare. Malawi's High Court will reconvene today, Monday, to hear more evidence in the case brought by two leading opposition parties to nullify the May 21st presidential election results. Meanwhile, lawyers for the Malawi Congress Party, one of the petitioners, say they want the court to summon President Peter Mutharika and Elections Commission Chair Jean Ansah to face cross-examination. The lawyers say President Mutharika is a party to the conflict and should be present in court to answer questions. Mgami Kililani is the spokesperson for Malawi President Peter Mutharika.
I think the understanding of law is that each case has to be understood within its own merits and content. This is the first constitutional dispute that we have in as far as elections are concerned in Malawi. We have had disputes in the past, but they weren't handled in the case as a constitutional matter. So this is the first time that we have an election dispute being handled as a constitutional matter.
President Mutharika himself is a professor of law. The last I read, he has asked the court to dismiss this case.
That was one of the issues that came from his legal team in the preliminary. They raised a technical preliminary objecting to the matter in which the proceedings were commenced. But the court, in its wisdom, whilst agreeing that there were problems with the commencement in terms of the rules and regulations of civil procedure in Malawi, they thought that perhaps it's much, much better to still allow those defects to be cured in the matter and allow the substantive matter to be heard. So, yes, the court agreed with the objections that were raised, the observations that were made, that civil procedure rules were breached, but the court still said the balance of convenience weighed towards going ahead regardless of the objections that were raised. That
was, do you think President Mutharika will appear before the court?
Well, let's cross the bridge when it gets there, because I think just like in the American constitutional setup, there are a lot of constitutional limitations, and of course, provide that the one intending to summon the president will have to deal with. So these are constitutional limitations that have been there before His Excellency the President became president. So because this expression of interest to have His Excellency the President appear before the court as a petitioner's witness, so it's a bit difficult to make a substantive comment until we see exactly on paper what the application is about.
Thank you very much, sir. You are always kind to speak with us. We appreciate very much.
Thank you so much, my brother.
Ngemi Kalilani is the spokesperson for Malawi President Peter Mutharika. You are speaking with us from the capital, Lilongwe. The death toll in Saturday's fuel tanker explosion in Tanzania has risen to 68. As Mwambeni, a former spokesperson for President John Magufuli's government, says the tanker's driver appeared to have lost control while trying to evade a motorcyclist. He said many people rushed with their buckets to collect the leaking fuel when the tanker exploded.
The accident occurred on Saturday morning when a lorry carrying petrol capsized in the main road from Dar es Salaam to Dodoma, which is the designated capital of Tanzania. And the accident occurred exactly after the people trying to take petrol from this capsized tanker. And assumption also are that someone was trying to get out a battery from that car to steal. And the fire exploded and everyone who was around was gutted down by fire. The estimates are that more than 68 people dead, and we have several also who are injured who are being treated in the main referral hospital in Dar es Salaam and another hospital within the Morogoro, an industrial city about 200 kilometers from Dar es Salaam.
You said about 100 wounded, sir. So is it fair to say that we could expect more fatalities?
The estimates that have been issued by the police is that 68 people are feared dead, and we have a score of more than 100 who are also hospitalized getting treatment from different hospitals in Dar es Salaam and Morogoro.
Do officials know what caused the accident? Because one account I have here is that the accident happened. I think the driver of the truck was trying to avoid a motorcyclist. What do you know?
Exactly, that's what happened, that the tanker was trying to avoid a cyclist who was crossing the road ahead. And in that attempt, the lorry had to ram into a side road and capsize in a form that you had the oil spill over from the tanker. That also attracted quite a big rush for people to rush for petrol. And some would do with a bowl or anything that they had just to collect some fuel from the tanker.
The statistics I have here is that Tanzania is among the countries with high rates of road traffic accident. And they say that motorcycles are the leading cause of these road traffic crashes with 53%. I've been to other countries and I've seen these motorcycles, the way they move around in the public streets. What's the regulation in Tanzania?
In Tanzania, we have a very strict rules in terms of motorists using the roads. But the only problem is that in the recent years, with the introduction of these cyclists, some of them comes into the road when they are ill-trained in terms of driving. You would expect any disaster from these motorists because most of them are inexperienced. But I can assure you that Tanzania is one of the countries in the world that has very strict laws on the motorists. But the concentration has been on a major commuter buses that carry a large number of people, and so they are well checked. But sometimes, as you know, cyclists can still pass in the road when you have traffic police around.
Thank you very much, sir. We are so happy to speak with you.
Thank you very much.
Asamoah Mbene is a former spokesperson for President John Magufuli's government. He was speaking with us from the Tanzanian capital, Dar es Salaam. Today is Monday, August 12th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Mbati in Washington. Daybreak Africa time coming up at 17 minutes past the hour. Guinea-Bissau's political parties are preparing for presidential elections in November this year. It marks the first time since multi-party elections were introduced into the country in 1991 that a president has finished his mandate. Vincent Foucher, a researcher for the French National Center for Scientific Research, talks to Ricky Stryak about the political maneuvering going on ahead of the elections.
This is the usual suspect for winning elections in Guinea-Bissau. They have won every election but one since multi-party elections began in Guinea-Bissau. The president of the PAGC, Domingos Simões Pereira, is very likely to run. There will be primaries inside the party, and he stands a strong chance to win the primaries.
Is there talk right now? I know this kind of turmoil is a strong word, but there's obviously there's competition for who will be the PAGC candidate. But is there concerns that this will, you know, hurt the party in general, the infighting?
It did last time. They had the Congress in Kacheu in 2014 as the elections were preparing. And part of the thing that has plagued the PAGC for the past 4 years is this Congress and the fact that basically the people who lost the Congress in the party gathered and organized to fight against the faction that won the Congress. And, you know, this has been the game in Guinea-Bissau for 4 years. So Congresses of the PAGC are always very tense and with very big controversies over procedures, over who has a right to vote and so on. But I must say this time, these indications that Domingo Simões Pereira really, a lot of critics left the party, first of all.
Yeah.
And he has consolidated his hold over the party, it seems.
What about the other parties, as you mentioned, such as Madem, who are the critic, who are former PSGC, who left? Their support was a lot bigger than people maybe expected during the parliamentary elections in March. So what are people expecting for the presidential elections?
Well, the thing is, Madem has not already, he's not supporting Vaj so far. So we still wait for their position. There's also a bit of wrangling on the anti-PSGC side. The position of the PRS is also still mm-hmm. unknown. So there could be several candidates there. I suspect there will be a second round in any case. So this will be when we'll see alignments. It's a very surprising situation. The rise of the Madem and how it's going to play out in the presidential context, not in the legislative context. That's going to be important because the question is whether Madem won because it had recruited locally significant people who were able to mobilize voters in specific circumscriptions mm-hmm. on their name, and we'll need to see whether it translates in a presidential election at the national level.
That was Vincent Faucho, a researcher for the French National Center for Scientific Research. He was speaking to Ricky Stryer from Paris. Heavy rains and flash floods have affected thousands in several regions of Sudan, including the capital, Khartoum. The Sudanese Professionals Association and political parties have called on all Sudanese to continue their campaign of draining rainwater. Reporter Naba Muhideen in Khartoum says the rains are impacting Eid celebrations.
The extent is so high, some experts describe it as 1988 famous floods, which covered different parts of Sudan. The average of the rain and the flood is so high. In some places, it was over 100 millimeter. In some areas, even in Khartoum. Water covered different neighborhoods, main roads, and blocked the traffic. Also, there was big electricity shortage as cables were damaged by the water, and it make life more difficult.
This comes at a time that Muslims are all celebrating a big holiday. What is the impact of this flood on the celebration there?
Actually, the flood and the electricity shortage and the block of the street and the traffic is more inaccessible all make Eid celebration so difficult for Sudanese as they used to celebrate outside Khartoum with their families in their hometowns. Traveling through the roads became so dangerous and so difficult, or the accidents are so high because of the flood and the rain.
Naba, you are in Khartoum. What regions of the country are specifically affected? Can we say also that Khartoum is also affected?
Yes, even Khartoum, the capital, is affected by the floods and the rain, but the big damage is in the Omdurman area. Over 667 houses were totally collapsed and 3 people died because of the floods and the rain.
I was reading somewhere where the Sudanese Professionals Association and the political parties have called on all Sudanese to continue with draining of rainwater. Do you know about that?
Yes, actually, the campaign is part of the Sudanese culture. It's called Nafir, and there is an initiative since 2013 to help people who are affected by the floods. So there is huge effort by neighborhood committees to help people and to get rid of water, to drain it, and to make traffic more easier and to prevent people from health issues by raising awareness and to collect Eid remains of the sheep and the leather of the sheep. But still, there is a big need as efforts are not enough to prevent the upcoming health crisis.
Naba, thank you very much.
Thank you, James. Have a nice day.
That was reporter Naba Muhideen in Khartoum, Sudan. Oza Gwen, considered the most popular singer-songwriter in the Central African Republic, recently came to the United Nations European headquarters in Geneva to awaken the world to the struggles faced by his country, which has been mired in civil war since 2012. Lisa Schlein reports.
Oza Gwen sings about the difficulties confronting his people.
He sings about the constant search for food in a country where insecurity prevents people from farming and harvesting their crops. He sings about people fleeing into the bush to escape the violence of armed groups. He sings about the same armed groups manipulating vulnerable people into doing their bidding so they can feed their families. The musician and activist recounts the difficulties he himself has faced in life. He says he was forced to quit school in the fourth grade to earn money, as he was the sole support of his mother and four younger sisters. He tells VOA there were no jobs in the CAR, so he went to Brazzaville in search of work.
Et moi, ils m'ont refusé, voilà, tu ne peux pas travailler avec nous, tu es trop petit. Et c'était comme ça que je me suis retrouvé dans la rue.
Olsagan says no one would hire him because he was too young and too small. He says he had no choice but to live on the streets. He says he spent 4 years as a homeless street child, scrounging for food, dodging the police, fighting off the mosquitoes. What saved him, he says, was his music. He says this experience also sensitized him to the plight of street children and prompted him to eventually create a foundation to help homeless youngsters.
Bon, ils sont en nombre de 32 dans 10 musulmans. Parce que à Bangui,
the musician notes money raised through his concerts helps to support 32 homeless children, including 10 Muslim children who live in a separate district in Bangui. He explains Muslims and Christians live in segregated areas in the capital. He says he is working to end this separation and to bring the two communities together. The United Nations calls the Central African Republic a forgotten crisis. War has displaced more than 1 million of the country's 5 million population. Nearly half that number have found refuge in neighboring countries.
That was Lisa Schlein reporting from Geneva. Time for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with the CAF Champions League preliminary round. First leg matches played across various venues on the African continent this past weekend. A total of 27 matches were played between Saturday and Sunday. Al Ahly of Egypt cruised to a 4-0 win over Al Tabara at the Bog Arab Stadium in Alexandria on Sunday. The record 8-time CAF Champions League winners were too strong for their South Sudanese opponents from start to finish, as they kicked off their quest for a ninth continental crown in style. Another former winner of the competition, South Africa's Orlando Pirates, lost by a goal to nil at Zambia's Green Eagles. Coach Milutin Seredajovic is the Orlando Pirates manager. He speaks on his side's loss.
We believe that we have dominated in all the aspects of the game except one crucial aspect, and that is to put the ball in the net. In that regard, we believe that we have what it takes to get the result that will take us to the second round.
Another South African side, Mamelodi Sundowns, lost 2-1 to Otoho do Oyo. The Brazilians played the majority of the fixture with 10 men following the early dismissal of Captain Lomfu Kekana. The biggest result came from Nigeria, where Kano Pillars defeated Ghanaian giants Asante Kotoko 3-2 and a 5-goal thriller. The other Nigerian team in action on Saturday was 2-time African champions Enyimba, who succumbed 1-0 away to Rahimo of Burkina Faso. Some Nigerian football fans react to Kano Pillars' win and Enyimba's defeat in the CAF Champions League first round.
I personally don't think it's a good result, especially when you consider the fact that they have shown they can score, but also the Ashanti Kotoko side, they also had shown that they really can score. If they could score two, you know, if they are able to score more goals back at home, then you have an unpleasant result for Kano Pillars.
Kano Pillars, the two sides have shown their sides who can score goals, so I think they just need to take the game back to Ashanti, because scoring 3 goals in a Champions League match is not a main feat.
The highest scoring game of the day came from the Gambia, where Brikama United held Moroccan giant Raja Casablanca to a 3-3 draw. Zambia's Zesco United pulled a 2-0 win in Swaziland against Green Mamba, while Tanzania giants Simba and Young Africans drew against Mozambique's UD Songo 0-0 away, and Botswana Starship Rollers also drew 1-1 at home respectively. In women's football, Bayana Bayana sealed their third straight COSAFA Women's Championship title with a 1-0 win over Zambia in the finals on Sunday. Siseko Makubila scored midway through the first half as Bayana Bayana secured their third women's COSAFA title in a row under coach Desiree Ellis, who also won the trophy as a player. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. And that is it for this Monday, August 12th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting your week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butt in Washington, hoping that you in Africa will have a very productive week.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll have an in-depth discussion on child marriage and how girls are valued around the world. Married teenage girls are often physically abused and forced into lives of chores and childbearing. The worth of a girl on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Join your host, Larry London.